You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, anagram adoring, audio absorbing, awesome audience. Welcome to Banjo Bird Goo.
What?
Oh, it's an anagram of yes. Good Job Brain.
Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 14. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And along with me are our marvelous minutia mining minds and mouths.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Yeah.
We're just mouths to you. Is that all we are?
And minds.
Oh, sorry.
Before we start the show, I want to share something pretty interesting. There's a new book recently called Cruising Altitude, Tales of Crash Pads, Crew Drama, and Crazy Passengers at 35,000 Feet by Heather Poole, not stewardess, but a flight attendant. And basically, it's a collection of stories and tales and facts of life as a flight attendant.
I want to read this.
Yes, yeah. Very interesting. And so there's one fact that I thought was really mind-blowing, which is flight attendants hate Diet Coke. Diet Coke is almost our unofficial drink of Good Job Brain.
Yeah, right?
Almost official.
We love Diet Coke. And turns out flight attendants hate Diet Coke. And the reason is because the fizz takes forever to settle.
Yes.
At 35,000 feet, it takes a really long time for it to kind of calm down. You know, in terms of time efficiencies, when you have a whole bunch of people ordering Diet Coke, they have to stand there in the aisle and kind of wait for the Diet Coke.
As more and more people shift to drinking diet sodas, you know, maybe there's money in finding out. Because this always happens to me. I order Diet Cokes like at bars and things like that, and like the bartender will pour Diet Coke in, and then it's just like 80% fizz. So maybe they'll formulate some Diet Coke that fizzes less.
So Heather Poole says, in the time it takes her to pour a single cup of Diet Coke, she can serve 3 passengers a different beverage.
That's really interesting.
Aww. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know the Mentos and the Diet Coke fountain guys, you know, who they make the little squirting fountains out of bottles, Diet Coke. I remember that they're saying that Diet Coke in particular is their soda. They use it because it is so foamy and frothy and produces such copious amounts of the bubbles. Yeah.
But yeah, that's
that's really interesting.
This and other facts and stories are in her book. Very interesting. So here we go. Let's start off our show with our general trivia segment with our random trivial pursuit card. Pop quiz, hot shot. All right, barnyard buzzers ready. Number one. What country is home to the electronics company Philips? Chris.
Japan.
Incorrect.
Oh.
I believe it's the Netherlands.
Yes!
Oh, that's right. Of course. Yes.
Well, I mean, of course. I didn't know that.
No, I mean, Philips did the CDI, which was the video game system, and they're based in Europe. Yeah,
they invented the CD. I believe they're credited with inventing the CD, yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Jointly, I believe.
You might be right.
Yeah. Pink Wedge, pop culture. What 70s Hanna-Barbera cartoon starred a dog who could do martial arts?
Oh.
Chris.
Hong Kong Fooey.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this character in my whole life. Yellow Wedge. Who was the last president born in a log cabin? James A. Garfield, Ulysses S. Grant, or Theodore Roosevelt? What a random, weird trivia.
Born in a log cabin.
It is James A. Garfield.
Well.
Could have been any of them.
I feel like if I had thought about it a little bit more, maybe I would have come up with that.
Okay, Purple Wedge. If you're typing in traditional hand position, what finger do you use to strike the letter Q?
Your left pinky?
Correct, left pinky.
Right, because it's upper left.
All right, Green Wedge for science. What abbreviation is the plastic polyvinyl chloride better known by?
Come on. I think Chris actually bust in.
Hong Kong food.
PVC.
Would that be PVC? Yes.
PVC, correct. And last question, Orange Wedge. What is a kitchen on an airplane called? Oh, not topical.
Galley.
Correct, galley.
Which comes from ships, right?
Yep.
I believe so.
term also refers to kitchen of a boat, train, or submarine. All right, and we also have our backer question. This one is from Trevor from Morro Bay, California.
These questions are always so weird.
This is weird. This is weird. What is the longest non-technical word in the English language?
I mean, longest non it's the black lung disease. Is that what he's looking for?
Is that technical?
Pneumono ultramicroscopic silico-volcanoconiosis.
Wait, can you say that again?
Is that, I believe it sounds like a technical word.
That's pretty technical.
Is that what he's looking for?
That is counts as technical.
Oh, is it anti? What is it?
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Yes, anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Wow, how do you guys know?
That's just known as this word.
I think that's also technical. Like that's a technical term.
I think like medicine or engineering. What do you mean?
I'm like super califragilistic. That is not technical.
That's not technical, but it's not a word.
It's in the dictionary.
What is he looking for?
Okay, let's see if I can pronounce this. Floxenasa nihilopilification.
What is it?
And it means the estimation of something as valueless.
Sounds
I'm
going to
challenge that answer, but...
Floxenasa nihilopilification.
Floxenasa nihilopilification.
Oh, mouthful, man.
Even though the sound of it was so...
quite atrocious.
All right.
So, let's jump into our topic of the week. Much like junk food, where we're all kind of crazy for, we're crazy about this. And, you know, it's a large topic. We're going to talk about toys, but toys is a giant topic. So, we're going to boil it down to, I don't know how to describe it, maybe more human version.
Okay, or anthropomorphic. Humanoid toys.
Yes.
Humanoid toys. So, dolls, action figures, and all that awesome stuff. Before we start out, I want to ask you guys, what company is the world's largest distributor of toys? Worldwide.
Distributor, not Toys R Us? I don't know.
Incorrect.
Walmart? Disney.
Incorrect. McDonald's.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Happy Meals.
That's
crazy. That's good.
Blows my mind. So McDonald's, anybody asks, you know the answer now. Huh. All right. I think we're going to do this boys versus girls. And we're going to let the boys go first.
Okay.
Obviously, you guys have your G.I. Joes and action figures, so...
Right. I mean, and dolls and action figures, really the same thing. It's just...
Well, it's a question of after the massive success of, like, Barbie, you know, in the 50s, it's like, well, how could we also sell this to boys, right? Because Barbie herself, which I think will... Karen, you said we're going to talk about Barbie, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, Barbie's a big part of the doll business.
Yes, yes, and it's a big part of girls growing up in America. So we'll let the girls tackle the Barbie thing. But, I mean, basically, even Barbie herself was revolutionary. And so after that revolution, it was a question of, what do we do for boys? Can we get boys to buy dolls? And the answer to that was G.I. Joe.
Yep.
The original G.I. Not G.I. Joe versus Cobra, but G.I. Joe, the down-the-middle, no-superpowers United States military.
And they were the larger ones. Yeah,
they were a foot tall, 11 inch tall.
Right, yes. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that
was the previous incarnation. Because I mean, not the 80s G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Oh yeah, G.I. Joe originally in the 1960s.
And they had a lot in common with the Barbies. I mean, they had outfits. And,
they were naked,
you know,
and they had outfits.
They had specialized uniforms.
Yeah,
and,
right.
They were kin naked though, right?
They were kin naked.
They were smooth.
Yes, they were. Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, you want to be. They're exploring all these crazy countries, and you can get all kinds of crabs. And yeah, they were kin naked. It was, how do we get them to swap outfits? Oh, well, you could buy the Air Force outfit for your G.I. Joe, or you could buy the Navy outfit for your G.I. Joe.
Probably fair to say the golden age of action figures would have been 70s, 80s.
The golden age of action figures was whatever age that you were buying action figures. Right? So,
But I mean, you know, the G.I. Joes and Star Wars figures and...
Right. Now, you're slightly older than me, so you were a Star Wars kid. The Star Wars figures themselves were actually kind of revolutionary, too, because they kind of brought us out of the dolls and action figures are really tall era, because, you know, you had G.I. Joes, which were very popular in the 60s, and the 70s were really popular with the Mego figures,
Mego.
Mm-hmm. Superheroes. And again, they were tall. They were a little shorter than G.I. Joes, but they were 8 inches tall. They had outfits that you could take on, and you know, it's like it still followed that same kind of, you know, pattern. Star Wars figures were what really changed the paradigm.
They
right?
did, because they were down, you know, 3¾-inch figures, obviously a lot smaller, less material to make. But you know, the other really brilliant stroke about the smaller figures is that it was a lot easier to make vehicles, you know, that you could scale them.
Oh.
You know, I mean, if you imagine you've got the G.I. Joe figure at 12 inches, if you want to make a Jeep that he fits in, it's, you know, it's going to be 2 feet long. But I mean, that wasn't necessarily the goal, but they discovered pretty quickly that in the world of Star Wars that they sold so many vehicles and things like that.
Oh.
It was a lot easier to, if you could fit the figures inside.
Originally, they had gone to Mego.
You know, along the lines of like M&M's turning down E.T.
Right.
And Reese's Pieces picking it up. Yeah, so Mego was approached, and the movie hadn't come out yet, Star Wars being the movie.
Oh!
And Mego was one of the kings of American toys. They made the Micronauts, and they made all kinds, as Chris said, all kinds of great 70s toys. And they turned down the offer to license the Star Wars toys. And
even knowing the context of the movie coming out.
Well, I mean, you have
all you know is
no one,
coming
out.
No
one could have, or certainly no one did predict how huge it was going to be. And then Kenner picked it up. Kenner Toys, a subsidiary of General Mills, which is one reason that there were so many serial and product tie-ins early on, because it was just, you know, corporate synergy right on down the line. So, well, we own the cereal company and this toy company, we can have mail-aways to encourage cross-selling
of
both.
Cereal and save your UPC codes, and you can mail it away for a Star Wars figure. Right, exactly. Yeah, and so Kenner was the company that
did end up picking up ultimately, Star Wars. Yeah, in the 90s, I think was bought by Hasbro, and Hasbro owns the rights to all the Star Wars now.
Right.
But Kenner at the time made millions and millions and millions of dollars, and one of my favorite stories about the early days of those figures was the very, very first Christmas of Star Wars. So, you know, Star Wars came out in May, summer 1977. Obviously, huge hit.
I mean, it became like the biggest grossing movie of all time within that first calendar
year,
right? It wasn't very long before, yeah.
Young and old, you know, boys, girls, I mean, everybody, it was a huge hit. And so it became really crystal clear that that Christmas was going to be a prime toy-giving, toy-buying opportunity. So I want you to imagine, though, you know, travel back with me. Imagine that you're a little kid, Christmas of 77, like you were just geeked out on Star Wars, like all you want is the Star Wars toys. You open up the box, you're expecting the Star Wars toys, your action figures, and you get an IOU from Kenner, which is essentially what happened. They could not ramp up.
Well, parents knew.
The parents knew. Parents knew. Yeah, it wasn't like the parents were shocked. But Kenner knew. They knew it was such a huge hit, but they had no chance of ramping up production enough to get enough action figures in stores in time for Christmas. But they didn't want to miss out on this looming cash cow. So it's pretty smart in one sense. So they came up with they called it the early bird package is how they branded it, which is pretty clever.
Instead of IOU.
Right.
That sounds pretty crappy.
Yeah. I'd be disappointed. But it was, for all intents and purposes, it was essentially a box that came with a little cardboard diorama. It had some pictures of the figures on it. They encouraged you to use it as a stand for when you eventually got the figures.
Okay.
They threw in some stickers and Star Wars swag and a fan club card. But the bulk of the purchase was you were buying a certificate that you could cash in for the figures a few months down the road.
You're buying futures in Star
Wars. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And, you know,
I wonder how many sad kids lost their certificate in that amount of time. It's hard to manage paperwork as an adult.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right.
They gave you something to open up on Christmas.
And the figures weren't ready for months is the thing. The figures weren't ready until well into 1978, and they had added a few figures by that time. And, you know, the original four figures. And if you have these today, I mean, the biggest irony is that these certificates now are worth many times more than
the certificate itself,
right? Of course.
Right.
Yes.
So, yeah, the first set was Luke and Leia and Chewbacca, Chewie, and R2-D2.
Darth Vader.
No Darth Vader,
no
Han Solo. Right,
yeah.
They decided those four. And in 1978, they sold 40 million action figures.
Wow.
Over $100 million, despite the early shortfall of getting an IOU.
They did follow through, though.
They did. If you sent in your certificate, you would get what they called the early bird package of those four figures.
In the mail.
Some months later.
God.
Yes. Merry Christmas. Christmas from Kenner.
Yep.
So yeah. inefficient yeah. back in the days. You can't even go to a store and like redeem it or something.
I mean, and then just the other small part that a lot of Star Wars fans will know is that this was George Lucas's really masterstroke, was that the studio essentially said to him, we'll let you have the lion's share of the merchandising rights in exchange for giving us these really favorable to us terms on the movie. And that's where Lucas really has the bulk of his billions, is from the merchandising that he was smart enough to yes. lock up early on. Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
For me, the action figure line that I was into, like you were into Star Wars, was He-Man.
Oh, yeah.
And this started up in 1981. And basically, this all actually apparently came about. There's some disputes because Mattel was negotiating for the rights to make Conan the Barbarian figures.
Well, based on the movie.
I believe so, yes.
And yeah. it was a comic before then, too. I think.
Yeah. So there was Conan the Barbarian was kind of enjoying a resurgence at that point. And they were looking at making action figures, but it fell through. They decided not to. And then, like a year later, they do He-Man, very similar to Conan the Barbarian. I believe there was legal action over this, and I think Mattel won because it wasn't, you know, materially, substantially, because there was so much to the He-Man mythos that they kind of came up with. And they came up with the mythology for He-Man and all of the action figures really first as action figures. And what they did was they had mini comics that told stories about He-Man and Skeletor and Teela and Prince Adam and all this kind of stuff, and they inserted those mini comics into the action figure packages. So you got this little comic. And that's how it told you who these people were, yeah, and what their origin stories were. Yeah.
The cartoon wasn't even made yet.
The cartoon wasn't even made yet. Now, eventually, in 1983, they started making the cartoon. And the cartoon, I mean, that cartoon was to sell action figures.
Yeah.
Advertising.
No doubt about it.
Yep. We introduce characters in the cartoon, and the kids like the characters, and then the action figure comes out later.
Oh,
yeah.
So smart.
And one of the things with Masters of the Universe is that really to save money in the beginning, I mean, it was very much designed to save money in every way possible in terms of reusing molds and reusing body parts. Like mm-hmm. He-Man and his arch nemesis, Skeletor, like their torso is the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Their crotch is the same.
They have veins on their leg in the same spot.
Right. Well, their legs and their arms are different because they had bad guy arms that were like claws, and they had bad guy legs that had webbed feet, but then they'd use those same bad guy arms and legs, and the arms popped off the torso because they're literally assembling them at the factory, like pop, pop, just popping the arms on. You know?
And they would just be different
colors,
the
legs are attached with rubber bands. Yeah, they just painted them different colors. They had figures that were just, like, there was Beast Man, but then they came out with Moss Man, who was just Beast Man covered in, like, green flecked fabric. And they would just get away with the most crazy stuff. Like, there was Stinkor, who was a skunk, but he was just Merman, right? Painted black, and then they took Mechanek's red armor and painted it orange and put it on Stinkor, and I think they gave him a weapon that was a repaint of somebody else's. So they made this whole new figure.
The whole thing is just mix and match.
It's just mix and match out of old parts.
I noticed they were always the same size, but I didn't realize, it's because they're made from the same parts. Just kind of hodgepodge.
Everybody
in this universe is exactly the same height.
You knew as a kid that they were doing that, you know? Yeah. That's how you start to get cynical as a kid. Is you buy a Masters of the Universe figure, and you're like, wait a gosh darn minute. I could have made my own.
I mean, I was making hybrids. Like, you put the Skeletor arms on He-Man.
Oh, yeah. And actually, well, Stinkor, they put, like, a perfume on
I remember. He actually had an odor
like,
to him.
Oh, he smells like a skunk. He didn't. He smelled like, you know, he smelled like a scratch and sniff snicker of
eggs.
Of dubious quality. No, it smelled good. No, it smelled good because as a kid, you just sit there and, like, you know, huffing Stinkor.
Huffing Stinkor.
Yeah, because it smells like
the Chris Kohler memoirs. Huffing Stinkor.
And then later, I mean, Masters of the Universe, I mean, again, just like the Star Wars figures, did incredibly well, and then it just petered out instantly towards like 1986, 87, when the movie came out. I mean, the movie was just the end.
I remember.
Like, the Dolph Lundgren motion picture, which, yes.
Frank Langella.
Courtney Cox, also. A pre-Friends Courtney Cox was in that movie. By that point, the last in the lines of the figures actually, like, all original sculpts. You know, they weren't reusing things. But they had a few characters from the movie, which are now some of the more collectible characters because they were produced in smaller batches. It just died. It petered out. They've brought it back with like figures aimed at collectors now.
I was gonna say, like, it's come full circle in that. I mean, Star Wars as well, that they have all these retro vintage editions that are sold to us again. You know, people like you and me, 20 years later.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
Not they're not selling to a younger generation.
You know,
trying to get you back.
And in terms of Mattel really coming full circle after, okay, well, what do we do? How do we make dolls for boys? Okay, action figures. A couple years into He-Man, it was how do we make action figures for girls? And that turned out to be Princess of Power, or She-Ra, which is combining. You know, they were the same height as He-Man, but they had pretty hair with that came with little brushes, so the girls could brush their hair. But then they fought with swords and guns.
Wow. Well, I think it's the girls' turn to talk about our action figures. No, they're just called dolls. They're dolls.
You make them go on adventures. They're action.
Of course, we have to talk about Barbie. The grandmama of all action figures and dolls. She's the one who started all. And actually, I didn't realize this until I did some research, was that before Barbie, all of the dolls or humanoid toys were babies.
Right.
And I didn't
give a girl
that.
A little baby doll to play with. Right.
Yep. Ruth Handler, who is the wife of Mattel.
Elliot Handler, the L in Mattel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so she saw this. She saw that her own kid, a daughter, Barbara, was playing with infant dolls and should pretend that they're a little bit older. And she's like, wait a minute, there's no market
to fit this role.
Yeah. Right.
Well, there's a market, but there's no product in the market. Or there's a huge market for this.
Yep. On a family trip to Germany, they saw that there was a doll in Germany called a Bild. Pronounce it.
Well, Lily.
Lily.
Yeah.
Bild Lily. It was a pretty much like a proto Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
A grown-up woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be. She was based off, I believe,
a newspaper cartoon.
Yeah, a cartoon. Yeah. She's kind of like a working girl, I guess, in the prostitute.
Well, no, well, I mean, not that she was a prostitute, but it was an adult-oriented newspaper cartoon about this kind of like dumb blonde girl who was like this blonde
like
bombshell,
and Dagwood,
who went around doing like kind of stupid girl things, right, in the newspaper. And so they made this doll, and it was more like a novelty thing for men, and people thought of it as being like a sex doll or sex toy, you know, because the Lily doll had really exaggerated proportions and hips, you know, and really looked like kind of a, you know, cartoonish parody.
Kind of the way, like, today, like, an adult collector might have, like, an anime or manga girl figure.
Exactly.
Or something
Yeah, precisely. Just like that.
And at first, Mattel were kind of lukewarm on that idea. They're like, no.
I don't think they wanted to do it at all.
Not at all?
No. They were just like, no. Because it's weird, like, who's going to buy this? It's like, it's really oddly mature. She has really huge breasts.
I know,
really? We're going to sell this to young girls? Like, they didn't understand.
Well, as you said, like, the previous, I think, the vision of, like, the role-playing and playing with the doll was that the girl envisioned herself as the doll's mother, whereas with Barbie, it's more envisioning yourself as Barbie.
Right.
So, I mean, it really, you kind of had to think about the play in a whole new way.
Do you guys know what Barbie's full name is?
I do, actually, because I researched it for this podcast. I believe it's Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Correct.
Yeah.
And she was named after the aforementioned daughter of the inventor.
Bonus point. What are her parents' names?
Elliot.
I wish it was Elliot and Ruth.
Tim and Marcia.
George and Margaret.
Wow.
Roberts. And she, from the lore, from canon, Barbie is from the town Willows in Wisconsin.
She's not a student, right? She's graduated college. She has a degree. She's out in the working world.
I think there might be conflicting.
Okay. She has a lot of degrees. She's an astronaut.
But she did go to high school in New York. So so she actually does have a whole backstory. And Barbie, lots of controversy with Barbie. Obviously, what Chris touched upon is it's very sexy. The first Barbie doll actually has kind of their eyes are looking to the side.
Oh, yeah, in sort of a demure way, like they're glancing over to the side instead of looking forward.
Little bit sexy.
And it was the Barbie doll, you have to look at the Lily dolls too, because the original Barbie dolls were just a straight up copy of the Lily dolls. Yeah, I mean, the eyes are looking the same way, the heads are, the Lily dolls have like a 5 head or a 6 head. That's how you can kind of tell the difference. They have a huge exaggerated comic forehead.
Right. Still
which
slightly
more
caricature.
Realistic for Barbie. Yeah.
Oh. Well, it saves on research and design, right? If you can just copy what somebody else.
And obviously Barbie's measurements have been, you know, in the news a lot.
Right.
A lot of people saying, oh, if we translate the Barbie size to an actual person, it's not very probable. Her waist is too skinny. And so Mattel has been widening her waist.
Well, and they've adjusted her over the years. Yeah. Right. Right.
But I mean,
right.
she still looks bombshelly. Right?
It's funny, they had like those real, the American Girl dolls, and those are kind of like proportioned like a real girl.
Right.
Are you there? I don't think you're their mother either. That's not the fantasy. It's more like they're you. Friend. They're or, you
or
at that
or your
age.
Little sister, maybe.
They're,
or,
and right. they're historical, so they're like, you as a slave, or you, you in old timey times.
Right, right.
I don't
right.
think they yes. really have that
no,
one.
Yeah, they do.
They have a slave American
yeah.
girl.
And she was a oh, yeah, wow. she was a freed slave.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Young girl is okay. about American history.
American
yeah.
history, okay. yeah. American history.
At least she's
dolls.
A freed slave. Okay.
Right. Wow.
American girl stuff, man. That stuff is crazy.
People go nuts.
I don't want to have girls because like just American girl bills alone are gonna bankrupt future me.
Are they really that expensive?
Well, yeah. yeah. I mean
they're
dolls are like ridiculous. You have to go to the American Girl store,
and it's
you know,
about
the stores
the
in like New York City and
like
things like that.
Else.
Oh yeah, of
yeah,
course.
So, I'm not
the dolls are so large, you know, like the dolls themselves are really expensive. Think about all the clothes and the books and everything like that.
Man, girls are pricey.
I know.
Oh,
more my boys. I'll just give them a couple of rocks to bang together.
More bonus points. We know Barbie's boyfriend or love interest is Ken.
Ken. Uh-huh.
What is Ken's full name?
Ooh.
Kenneth
J. Smoothcrotch.
I think I like Ken better if his name was indeed Kenneth J. Smoothcrotch. It's Ken Carson.
Oh,
okay. I think I knew that.
And now there was she has her cousin or sister, right? Skipper.
Skipper.
Yep.
Is that
it's her sister?
It's her sister. Okay.
There's a whole there's Barbie's a lot of... family is as extensive as
right because there's like
Snoopy's
babies
families.
And yeah.
Yep. And
yeah.
she has a pregnant friend, a pregnant Midge.
Midge
right,
has been pregnant
right.
for a long time.
They don't make Barbie pregnant right. because that would lead to too many uncomfortable
that
conversations.
Be, right, right,
so
right.
So it has
right,
to be her friend,
right,
Midge,
right,
who's
right,
pregnant.
Right, her and... boyfriend has genitals.
husband.
It's not married, Midge. It's just pregnant. Teen pregnant Barbie.
So, Midge, you can remove... her uterus, well, not uterus, what? But her skin, her belly, okay. her
oh.
pregnant belly. You can remove it. It's like a lid. And inside is an upside down baby.
Oh, so it's C-section.
Yeah.
C-section Midge.
It looks really gross. It looks like something from Alien.
Is this a modern one or this is like a retro one?
This they've been making pregnant Midge
wow.
for a while.
I did not know that.
And in 1997, Mattel joined forces with Nabisco to do a cross promotion.
Cracker Barbie.
Double stuff Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. You open her stomach and there's
cookies
chips
in there.
Inside.
Yeah. It's
cookies and cream Midge.
Called Oreo Fun Barbie.
Oh,
and it's
I saw this. I saw this at the flea market. What is it?
So it's just Barbie who likes Oreos, basically.
That's crap. And that's just
the whole intent is so, you know, little girls can play after class with their Barbies while eating Oreos and milk.
Mm. Oh, they can all eat
they can
Oreos.
All enjoy.
Is she holding Oreos or something? What does she...
So,
I'm sure it comes a stack of tiny Oreos,
the
right?
Interesting
like a
thing
Pez
is,
dispenser, you pull back her head and Oreo comes out of it.
This was back in 1997, so I think in the 90s, they would make, for every kind of a new Barbie version, they would make a black Barbie and white Barbie. So for Oreo Fun Barbie, they had both the African-American Barbie and the original Barbie.
Yeah.
And people kind of freaked out because Oreo is might be used as a derogatory term.
Indeed.
Or,
yes.
Yeah, someone who is, quote, black on the outside and white in the inside. So a lot of people are like, whoa, that is really weird. And so guess what? The doll was unsuccessful and Mattel recalled the unsold stock. And
really?
Actually, if you saw this at the flea market, you should buy it because it's sought after by collectors.
Get
out. I bet.
Oreo Fun Barbie.
Man.
And Barbie collectors are hardcore.
I missed it. Non-controversial Barbie. So they actually did a series of Barbie in the workplace.
Right.
Like Barbie goes to work kind of stuff, like veterinarian Barbie and things like that. And they actually had people vote online on what they would also like to see added to the line. And the runaway success, duh, in this online poll
is it blogger Barbie?
It was, in fact, computer engineer Barbie.
Yes, that's right.
Was, of course, that's what the internet decided to so pick. Cute. And so, yeah, there's a computer engineer Barbie.
She has a little laptop.
There.
Well, yeah. there was a small controversy because they gave her a pink laptop, right?
Oh, no. Part of it was I felt that they thought that they had given her, like, a dumb phone, like a flip phone
or something like that, instead of a smartphone.
Yeah, but I think maybe there was a pink laptop, too. Yeah.
I think there is a blogger Barbie.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, I think there's a separate blogger Barbie.
Writing for, like, Jezebel about celebrities.
a lot of blind items on Midge.
Midge's baby bump enters its 27th month.
Aww. It's like Midge has, she's like, those calcified babies just stuck there forever. Oh, poor Midge.
Dark turn.
It got really dark.
Sorry.
So there, you know, dolls that are about taking care of babies, like, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about those kinds of dolls. So when I was a little kid, Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the...
Nuts.
Such a phenomenon. Yep. Such a... My little sister was definitely into the Cabbage Patch Kids.
1984, 20 million dolls were sold that year.
And it folds back into video games, of course, like everything does with me, because it was made by Coleco. Just kind of finished up, like the video game market had just crashed, and the ColecoVision was basically off the market, and their Atom computer had basically failed.
Yeah.
And they found salvation in Cabbage Patch Kids. Yeah.
A lot of salvation. Oh my God.
Yeah, that was a
good move. Yeah. Cabbage Patch Kids, they're basically babies that supposedly you have to adopt them because they're born from cabbage patches, not from parents.
Well, and each of the dolls is different. They use computer technology to make each of them totally unique.
Right.
And they all have their own names and a birth certificate and adoption papers when you get them. And they come from Babyland General Hospital. That's part of the whole fantasy of Cabbage Patch
Kids. The Cabbage Patch Kids is one of the lies that you tell your kids about, like, you know, they ask where babies come from and you don't want to actually tell them. So you're like, oh, well, the stork delivers them. And then some people say, oh, well, babies grow in cabbage patches.
They're
fertilized
by the bunny bees.
This is in the Cabbage Patch mythology.
It's canon for the Cabbage Patch. They fertilize them with crystals, magic crystals. And you're helping them escape from being enslaved in the gold mines.
So Dickensian.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, and I remember the cabbage, they had these big round heads round eyes.
As much as how successful Cabbage Patch Kids are, they're ugly. They're really ugly. I don't care what computer technology made them unique. When you look at, they look really freaky.
There was an urban legend in the 80s about them being ugly on purpose in order to prepare people in case there's a nuclear holocaust that their children will be ugly. So that was like an urban legend that was going around.
Baloney.
There was also Cabbage Patch Kids controversy because they had, I recall, Cabbage Patch Kids preemies.
Yes.
Which they made smaller Cabbage Patch Kids.
They did.
And they're like, oh, it's a preemie.
That's right.
It's a premature baby.
That's right. It was so sad.
Well, they were the ones that looked like babies, not like little toddlers. They were ball headed.
But it was like, the whole thing was just like, wait, and they marketed these things. And it was just, wait a minute, are we really like glamorizing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, celebrating the premature baby? Like, severe health risks. And
jeez.
Yeah.
You know what? But in the 80s, it seems like they're probably. There was a higher chance of premature babies living than there had been before. I knew a lot of preemies when I was growing up, so
yes,
I wonder
in the 80s and 90s
to garner some preemie pride. I was premature.
I'm gonna wager that it was more about selling toys than making any grand social statement.
It was a marketing.
Yes, I would put my money
because
on that.
It turned people off.
But I remember like they grew out of cabbages, right? They would have these rows of cabbages with these tiny round heads in the middle of them.
So scary.
Do you remember Garbage Pail Kids?
Oh, yes!
Totally. That was what Thank God for Cabbage Patch Kids inspiring Garbage Pail Kids.
They had the awesomest names. I thought they were associated with each other because they looked just like Cabbage Patch Kids.
Wait, they're separate?
Oh, yeah.
It's totally
it
different.
Parody.
Yeah. Yeah. They, Xavier Roberts, who did the Cabbage Patch Kids, sued Topps for those.
Yeah.
Garbage Pail Kids were basically a parody of Cabbage Patch Kids, and they were trading cards with stickers, and they came with gum and little packs at the store.
They were following on from like Wacky Packages, which was a set of parody trading cards, which parodied product.
Yeah. They had crazy names like Smelly Kelly or Yicky Mickey, and they were gross pictures.
They were
of Cabbage
really
Patch
gross,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
but they were right up your alley if you're a little kid. They were awesome.
So they're separate.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a parody. That's crazy,
because they look exactly like...
Well, that's the whole point. It was like kind of like Mad Magazine-style parody, where the goal is like get the art style as close as possible. And, I mean, I don't know if this was the goal, but at least in my circle of friends, it was mostly the boys who were really into the Garbage Pail Kids, yeah. which I thought was pretty clever, since it was mostly the girls who were into the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes.
So it kind of... they found a nice market for the parody.
Everybody in my class had them. We traded them crazy.
Yep.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey, Matt, did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope, never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
All right, and I have a quick toy quiz for you guys, so get your buzzers ready. Okay. And today we're going to talk about, in my quiz, names of toys. A lot of toys have very, very weird and eccentric names. And first up, this toy comes from the Filipino Tagalog expression meaning come. Technically, it's come, come.
Is that a yo-yo?
Correct.
Oh, yo-yo. Wow.
To come,
is
come.
It- From the Philippines? The yo-yo?
All right. And this comes from a phrase in a foreign language that means play well.
Oh. I believe that's Lego?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
The Danish phrase for play well is leggot. So this toy slash game is named after the word that means to grope frantically. It's a real word, and the real word stands for grope.
I believe that's Scrabble.
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
Scrabbling for purchase.
Yeah, scrabbling okay. for, yes, yes,
and
it's wonderful.
Scrabble was first called Lexico and then got changed to crisscross words. and then changed to Scrabble.
Lexico sounds like a bad, nerdy villain. And
Lexico!
I'm gonna use the power of words against you.
All right. The name of this toy is derived from the word peppermint in a foreign language.
Pez.
Correct.
Pfeffermans.
Yep. German word for peppermint, which is Pfeffermans. This toy means to build.
Oh.
Swahili word for to build.
Is it Jenga?
Correct.
Oh, nice.
Jenga.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
And last one here, a little bit tricky. So this toy was named after the name of a baking company in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And there's a reason why it's a baking company.
Easy Bake Oven.
No.
Nah.
They used something from the baking company to make this toy.
Oh, wait. I'll say it. It's not right. Shrinky Dinks.
No.
No.
Frisbee.
Oh,
the pie pan.
The Frisbee Baking Company had a whole bunch of pie tins that people used to throw around and hence became Frisbee.
Right. College students.
That's right. And it was Frisbee B-I-E.
It was F-R-I-S-B-I-E.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Awesome. Good job, you guys.
That was a good one.
That was my quick toy quiz.
So as I kept thinking about collectible values, because, you know, that's where my mind goes. You know, I started thinking about the ultimate fad of Beanie Babies in the 1990s.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Even though the beanie, so Beanie Babies, for those who are like, you know, if you're living under a giant pile of discarded Beanie Babies and don't know about them, they're small stuffed animals. They were sold in like Hallmark stores and little, you know, kind of boutique stores like that, mostly for the first few years. But they're filled with beans or little PVC
like little bean
beads,
bean
right?
Bag style.
Yes, they're bean bags, so they can you can pose them a little more easily, basically. And the company, the guy's name is Ty Warner, and he started the company like Ty Warner Incorporated, which he eventually changed to Ty. You know, they have the little plastic paper tags on them that have the Ty company logo, TY. For some reason or another, these things became huge.
Right.
And not only did kids love them, like this was in 1993, 1994, they kind of started up, and a few years, you know, a couple of years down the line, every kid wanted all these Beanie Babies, but adults just started collecting them.
And there were limited amounts of them,
well,
right?
Well, first of all, there were limited amounts because, you know, it was a small toy company that was just making a few toys and selling them in specialty shops, you know? But their strategy was they came up with this, the phrase, retiring. These Beanie Babies. And they're
creating artificial demand, artificial scarcity.
So, I mean, instead of discontinuing, you know, we're crossing this off the list, we're like, well, this Beanie Baby's going into retirement, so buy it now. And because they were kind of hard to track down in the first place, you know, people would sort of scramble to buy them.
Right.
What this then caused is people going out and buying the new Beanie Babies, assuming that,
on
you
spec.
Know, because, yeah, exactly, yeah. Because these older ones were retired and suddenly became worth money, right? Because now the secondary Beanie Baby market emerges. And interestingly enough, some of them really do still sell for a lot. It was the Dutch tulip craze for Beanie Babies. Precisely, speculators got into it. They had no value. And one day, everybody decided they weren't worth anything anymore, and the bottom of the market drops out, and people, if you had a lot of money tied up in these, and Beanie Babies, they did like a Princess Diana bear immediately after Princess Diana died, and it was this purple bear with a white rose on it, you know, and people bought those up. Those are worthless now, because they made so many of them, you know? But there's some, and I'll tell you, so if you're looking out for these, I looked on eBay for actual completed auctions that actually sold, and things like Peking the Panda, which was a panda.
and that was, I mean, just as a quick aside, that was part of their thing, was like each one was a different animal with a cute, usually alliterative name, you know, Jenny the Giraffe, Peking the Panda, right.
There was a Brownie the Bear, which is one of the first, like, of the Beanie Babies that they did, and they changed his name to Cubby very shortly afterwards.
So you have one with
the tag that says Brownie, but then, of course, it's just a little paper tag. You've got to make sure it's not a counterfeit tag, you know, like because people would switch the tags on things.
I remember,
you know,
they made tag protectors.
There was a
cottage industry in the accessories around the Beanie Babies, including a protector for your tag.
The coolest thing, I thought you might like this, is that around 2006, I believe it was, the chef Joel Robuchon was opening a new restaurant. I think it was in New York. And to commemorate this, to invite people to the grand opening of the restaurant, they sent them a special Beanie Baby with a chef's hat and a chef's coat that said Chef Robuchon on it. And the Beanie Babies, the bear's name was Chef Robuchon. And they mailed these out as part of the invites to the grand opening. This is like the most desired
premiere,
the baby.
So I want to talk about what I thought this was going to be grouped in with the boys action figure stuff. I see this as the original action figure, Mr. Potato Head.
I think it's unisex, but skews to girls, actually.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of girl accessories on there.
I feel like it's split right down the middle.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I had as many,
Vegetables are unisex.
Right, but how smart, you know, mom is preparing dinner, you know, and she's not ready to peel the potatoes yet. She's like, here, okay, take this potato and you can use your, because the original Mr. Potato Head was just a box of,
it was just a bunch of accessories,
right? It did not come with a body. You're supposed to use an actual potato,
supply your own potato.
I did not know this at all.
It's smart.
And this was when that they came out with them?
And this was 1950s,
I believe.
But the thing is, the big change when they actually introduced the plastic body, it was because people were injuring themselves. Little kids were
I was wondering about that because potatoes aren't soft. Like, they're not.
No, yeah. All of those eyes and nose and stuff, they actually had a pretty sturdy poking mechanic in the back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or were they like slip trying to poke it in or whatever?
Yep. So they would pierce it into the potato, and kids. Kids are dumb.
Kids are dumb.
Kids are dumb.
Motor skills haven't fully developed.
Exactly.
That's a recurring motif on this podcast.
They changed that. They actually had the plastic potato body
right. With
the bigger holes, and you can fit the peg eggs in the holes, so there's no cutting involved.
They, as I was looking at stuff for this podcast, I was looking at the original box for the slip and slide, which actually has a diagram showing a kid doing like a back somersault onto the. It's like just flip over backwards and land on your back on the slip and slide and slide all the way down.
Perfect.
They didn't really think things through.
Speaking of like not having lawyers in the commercials or whatever. So do you guys remember the Stretch Armstrong? Do you know this toy? Okay. I didn't just have a Stretch Armstrong. I had multiple Stretch Armstrongs.
He's kind of like Mr. Fantastic.
Right.
So I had one until he broke.
Exactly. Every kid had at least one until they broke. They were so fragile. So just for anyone who may not know what it is, the very original was Stretch Armstrong, and he kind of looked like a pro wrestler. He was like this big blonde buff guy with like little black trunks on, and it was a latex rubber skin, and the whole thing was filled with this viscous material, so you could stretch the arms and legs way, way out, multiple feet long. And what I remember about the commercials, you know, so it came out in 1976 originally. The commercials were just these little boys just stretching the arms as far as they could. Like, I felt like the commercials were almost daring you to try and break the toy. And that's
and people did.
Oh, I remember my sister and I had one, and we would each grab an arm and a leg and just see how far we could go.
Yep.
Like, kids would bring them to school. We would wrap them around the jungle gym. And sure enough, they would always, always, always develop these little punctures or tears in the skin.
And
the stuff inside comes out, and it's sticky and gooey. Yeah. And it was actually...
What is it?
So I did a little bit of digging into this, and it got more and more fascinating. So as I say, the skin was latex. They were filled with corn syrup.
Okay.
It was like a condensed, gelled corn syrup.
So it was totally non-toxic.
Totally non-toxic.
Say poison.
Right. But it would get all over everything. And I remember at our house, you know, we would puncture them, and my dad would try and fix it or whatever, and that would never last.
No.
And so we'd buy a new one. They had many variations of the Stretch Armstrong. It was such a hit. So they started coming out with superhero versions. I had the Hulk. They had these two octopus figures as well, and I remember very clearly having these. They were Ollie and Olivia. And
did they have eight tentacles?
They did.
That sounds awesome!
It was so much fun. And you can, they have, if you just do a little Googling, you can still find photos and commercials of these, and they were so much fun, because it was the stretchy, viscous material, but with eight tentacles to pull on.
That's awesome.
Now, did any kid like strangle himself with this, or like, you know, they tie it around each other's necks and then it snaps back?
I remember we would try using them. We would use them as handcuffs and things like that. I mean, it was like, I didn't find any reports of children dying or asphyxiating, but many, many broken ones. The more I read about this, and a lot of this information is coming from StretchArmstrongWorld.com, a fanatical collector has put together this information.
Can you still buy them?
So they've reintroduced them at various points, and in fact we talked about Mego earlier. Mego came out with their own line of they called them the Elastic. There was Elastic Batman, Elastic Hulk. They came out with another one. Every now and then they'll come out. They came out in the 90s again. They reissued Stretch Armstrong, but apparently the original 70s ones are among the most collectible toys out there,
intact,
because they're so fragile. Right? They're so, like, to not only to have survived being played with by kids, but I guess, you know, they're latex rubber and viscous gel.
If they're stored
in too hot temperatures or too cold temperatures, they just disintegrate.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of these hardcore collector guys, they'll say people will find them in their attic and like, oh, I remember this toy. And you pull the arm and it just comes right off. Thousands of dollars, literally thousands of dollars for some of these. And they estimate that for some of them, you know, for the Batman and the Hulk, there may be fewer than 20 left in the entire world. These hardcore collectors.
Keep their monsters.
You can count, you can count on one hand the number of Stretch Batmans left in the world, apparently.
Wow.
I read, just a couple quick little tidbits. I read that from 1976 to 1979, Mego was the largest buyer of corn syrup in America to fill these action figures. And perhaps most depressingly, Well, I think we can all agree that, you know, nothing makes a better movie than a movie based on a toy, right? In 2008, they picked up the rights for Stretch Armstrong to make a movie out of it, much the way they've done with Battleship.
And yeah.
Taylor Lautner was apparently attached to the project.
To be Stretch Armstrong.
To be Stretch Armstrong. he is no longer connected to the project. So
connected.
So look forward to that. Apparently, one of the rarest Stretch Armstrongs was kind of created as a joke by some of the employees at MeeGo. They customized some of the molds and made two Stretch Armstrong with manhood. And I'll just let you imagine what that means.
Oh, with manhood. I was imagining like a hoodie? What?
A hooded sweatshirt? That like doesn't sound
a manhood.
So yes, there are two anatomically correct Stretch Armstrongs.
Of course, well,
of course correct being very, very loose.
It's like flesh-colored plastic being your
whatever. Right.
Nice. So that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you guys learned a lot about Stretch Armstrong anatomy and whatnot.
Masters of the Universe.
So you can find us on Zune Marketplace, on iTunes, on Stitcher, and also on our website. And we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.